Chapter 13. Nassau, Bahamas. Selma had donned her travel agent hat with characteristic proficiency, reserving them a pair of first-class seats on the last red-eye out of San Diego heading east. 7 hours and one layover later, they touched down at Nassau International Airport shortly after noon. They had less luck with their rental car, however, ending up with a bright red Volkswagen Beetle convertible, which Selma swore was the sexiest and fastest car in all of the Bahamas. Sam suspected Remy had bribed their research chief, but said nothing until they were pulling out of the parking lot and were passed by a Corvette bearing an Avis sticker. "Did you see that?" Sam said, glancing over his shoulder. "It's for your own good, Sam," Remy said, patting him on the knee. "Trust me." She put her hand atop her white sun hat to keep it from whipping away and leaned her head back, basking in the tropical sun. Sam grumbled something in reply. "What was that?" Remy asked. "Nothing." Waiting for them at the Four Seasons Resort reception desk was a message. "Have information. Call landline ASAP. R." "Rube?" Remy asked. Sam nodded. "Why don't you go to the villa? I'll see what he has to say, then join you."
"Okay."
Sam found a quiet corner in the lobby's seating area and hit speed dial on his satellite phone. Reuben Haywood picked up on the first ring.
"It's me, Rube."
"Hang on, Sam."
There was a click, followed by a hissing squelch as Rube engaged what Sam assumed was some kind of encryption device.
"How are you?"
"Great. Thanks for this. I owe you one."
"No, you don't."
Haywood and Sam went back 12 years, since Sam's early days at DARPA, having met at the CIA's Camp Perry training facility in the wilds of the Virginia countryside near Williamsburg. Haywood, a case officer in the CIA's Directorate of Operations, was going through covert operative training. Sam was there for the same purpose, but as part of an experimental program designed to put DARPA's best and brightest through the kind of real-world scenarios CIA officers experience in the field. The idea was simple. The better DARPA's engineers could understand what fieldwork was really like, hands-on and up-close, the better they would be at creating gadgets and tools that met real-world challenges. Sam and Rube had instantly bonded, their friendship cemented over the 6 long weeks of training, and they'd stayed in touch ever since, meeting once a year in the fall for a 3-day hiking trip through the Sierra Nevada.
"Everything I'm going to tell you is unclassified, at least officially."
Sam read between the lines. After receiving his call, Rube had in turn made his own calls, tapping contacts and sources outside the government.
"Okay. Your message said ASAP.
"Yeah. The name of the guy you call Scarface used a pretty heavily backstopped credit card attached to dummy accounts to rent the boat in Snow Hill, so it took a little digging. His name is Grigory Arkhipov. Ex-Russian Special Forces, spent time in both Afghanistan and Chechnya. He and his right-hand man, a guy named Kolkov, left the army in 94 and went freelance. Arkhipov, you're familiar with, but I'll email you a picture of Kolkov. If you haven't seen him around yet, you will. As far as we can tell, they've worked for just one man since 05, a real nasty piece of work named Hadayon Bondaruk."
"I've heard the name."
"I'd be surprised if you hadn't," Rube replied. "He is the kingpin of the Ukrainian mafia and the toast of Sevastopol high society. He throws parties and hunt weekends at his estate several times a year and restricts his guest list to the uber-wealthy. Politicians, celebrities, European royalty. He's never been charged with a crime, but is suspected of dozens of murders. Mostly other crime bosses and enforcers who, for whatever reason, made him mad. Other than rumors, there's not much out there about his past."
"I love gossip," Sam said. "Let's hear it."
"Rumor is he commanded a cell of guerrilla fighters in Turkmenistan during that whole Russian-Iranian border mess. moved around the mountains like a ghost, ambushing patrols and convoys, never leaving anyone alive.
A real Samaritan.
Yeah. So what's your interest in him?
I think he's after the same thing we are.
Which is?
Better you not know, Rube. You've stuck your neck out far enough already.
Sam, come on.
Just leave it, Rube, please. Haywood paused, then sighed.
Okay, you're the boss.
But listen, you've been lucky so far, but your luck could run out in a big hurry.
I know.
Will you at least let me help you? I know a guy down there you should see.
You got a pen?
Sam grabbed a pad from the end table and took down the name and address Rube recited.
I trust him. Go see him.
Will do. And for God's sake, take care of yourselves. You hear me?
I hear you.
We've been through some tough scrapes together, Remy and I. We'll handle this one.
How exactly?
Easy. We're going to stay one step ahead of them. 3 hours later, Sam pulled the Beetle off the coast road into a small gravel parking lot and eased to a stop beside a rusted Quonset hut topped by a windsock and bearing a faded, hand-painted sign, Air Samson. 50 yards to the right was another Quonset hut, this one larger, and through the sliding double doors they could see the nose of an airplane. On the other side of the hangar was a landing strip composed of crushed seashells.
This is it?
Remy asked, eyes narrowed. Sam checked the map.
Yep, this is it.
Selma swears it's the best charter place on the island.
If she says so.
Are you really going to bring that thing? She asked, nodding to the towel-draped object lying on the floor between Sam's feet. After hanging up with Rube, Sam had gone to the villa and recounted the conversation to Remy, who listened carefully and asked no questions.
I don't want to see you get hurt, she said finally, taking his hands in hers.
And I don't want to see you get hurt. It'd be the end of my world.
Then let's not get hurt. Like you said, we'll just stay one step ahead of them. And if things get too rough,
we'll call in the good guys and go home.
Sure we will, she replied.
Before coming to the airstrip, after leaving the hotel, they'd first followed Rube's address to a shoe repair shop in downtown Nassau, where they found that the owner and Rube's contact, Guido, was expecting them.
Reuben wasn't sure you would come, Guido said in slightly Italian-accented English. He said you were both very stubborn.
Did he now?
Yes, oh yes.
Guido walked to the front door, flipped over the out-to-lunch sign, then led them into the back room and down a set of stone steps into the basement, which was lit by a single hanging light bulb. Lying on a bench amid shoes in various states of disrepair was a snub-nosed .38-caliber revolver.
You both have handled guns, yes?
Yes, Sam replied, answering for both of them. In fact, Remy was a damn good marksman and had no fear of handling guns, but tried to avoid them if at all possible.
Good, Guido answered. No serial numbers on the gun. Untraceable. You may throw it away when you are done.
He wrapped the gun in a towel along with a box of 50 bullets, then handed it to Sam.
One favor, if you don't mind.
Name it, Sam said.
Don't kill anyone.
Sam smiled.
That's the last thing in the world we want to do.
How much do we owe you?
No, please, nothing. A friend of Reuben's is a friend of mine.
Sam now asked, you want me to leave it?
No, I guess not. Better safe than sorry.
They got out, collected their backpacks from the trunk, then went into the Quonset hut. A black man in his late 60s sat behind the counter on a lawn chair, a cigar jutting from his mouth.
Well, hello there, he said, rising to his feet. I am Samson, owner, operator, chief bottle washer.
He spoke perfect Oxford English. Sam introduced them, then said,
not from around these parts, I take it?
Born in London,
Came here 10 years ago to live the good life. So, you're going to Rum Key?
Right.
Business or pleasure?
Both, Remy said. Birdwatching, photography, you know.
Sam handed over his pilot's license and filled out the required forms. Samson looked over the forms, then nodded.
Overnight?
Probably.
You've booked a hotel there?
Sam shook his head.
We're roughing it.
You should have gotten a delivery yesterday. Tent, potable water, camping gear. Guided by one of her dozens of mental checklists, Selma had arranged a full load of gear for their trek, from the absolute necessities to the what-ifs.
Samson was nodding.
I did. It's already loaded.
He pulled a clipboard off a nail on the wall, jotted a note, then returned it.
I've got you in a Bonanza G-36, fueled and checked.
Pontoons?
As requested. Head over to the hangar and Charlie will send you on your way.
They turned and headed for the door. Samson called, What kind of birds you hoping to spot?
They turned back.
Sam shrugged and smiled.
Whatever is native to the island.